Hi, my name is Kendra, and I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be able to participate in my recovery. You know, you'll hear that word come out of my mouth a lot. I say it like after everything I'm about to say. So, you know, when I think about Vision of Hope, I think about where I came from. And, you know, I'm from the Small Wonder area. My home group is on Monday nights at 8 o'clock, Weekend Survivors Group. My clean date is April 15th, 2008. So I just celebrated an anniversary, which is an amazing thing for me. And that in itself is a vision of hope, because where I come from, I couldn't get one day clean. I lived to use and I used to live. I grew up in a household where at the age of 2 years old, my dad walked out and left. And my mom's drinking and her drugging started taking a big full effect in her life. And she started leaving me and abandoning me with my grandmother. I learned what it was. You know, my first drug of choice, I always say, is fantasy. Because I always fantasized. I can remember, like, my mom and the highs and the lows. And what I didn't know then, now I know, was just the highs and the lows of her addiction. And I used to always crave for her attention. And instead of being like a normal little girl where some of them want to be Barbies or they dream of their wedding or something like that, I just fantasized about being loved, just being able to fit in. I can remember walking on eggshells or going to tell my mom something and being afraid to say it, or just chameleoning myself at a young age to fit in my own household, you know. And it wasn't long before my mom got remarried, and she married into a really abusive relationship. And through that relationship is my first experience with fear, with true fear. I can remember being there, and this guy, he had such a power over me and my family. All he had to do was look, and I felt like he was going to kill us. And I learned to be a chameleon then. I learned to be just this good little girl. And I walked around through life like that, feeling abandoned because both my parents pretty much left me. I ended up landing in with my grandparents until about the age of like 11 years old. My mom was in and out of the picture, but it usually wasn't until like at the end of her run, and she would come home and she'd crash on the house on the couch for a couple days, and she'd take off again. And I can remember just craving her love and just wanting to be just like her. And so she came back into my life around 11, when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and I went and I moved in with her. And from that point on, for some reason, the partying started. And she didn't appear to be as messed up as she was when I was a younger child. But I've learned that, like, the disease of addiction comes in all different shapes and all different forms. It isn't actually just the amount of drugs that somebody's putting in their body. I've learned in this process that, that using is just a symptom of the disease. And I can remember my very first drink. I was about 11 years old, and you know, it was a friend of mine, and he was like, yeah, don't drink too much of this, don't drink it too fast. And he took a lighter and he lit it on fire, and it went up in flames, and it's grain alcohol. And so I took it to the head, and I can remember crawling up the road that day, crying, talking about saying some boy's name, Tony. Mind you, I'm 11 years old. Like, saying this some boy's name, Tony. He was like this cute skateboarder dude when I was growing up in school. Didn't even, like, pay attention to me or notice me. But I just wanted that love. And it was the first time ever that I felt free to be me. And from that point on, man, it was just off to the races. I started drinking with my mom. I got kicked out of school in the eighth grade. Well, I got kicked out of a school function in the eighth grade on a school trip at Cape Henelopen. My mom had bought me two bottles of liquor to take with me. And it was a bottle of peach schnapps and black Sambuca. And later on that night, she had to come pick me up from Cape Penelope and shows up drunk, picks me up, takes me home. And I think we probably drank some more. So I really, you know, like my grandparents taught me what it was to live a normal life for like the first like 10 years of my life. But I just wanted to be her, like I said. And so I did anything and everything to be like her. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. So like I was drinking with my mom. It wasn't long before I was sniffing coke with my mom. And by the time I turned 13 years old, I had found crack cocaine. And I had actually found it through some guy who turned out to be my baby's dad, and he was going to love me forever, and I'm so glad that's not the case. You know, he sold, and I had met some people in the process of hanging out around his way, and they said, yeah, you want to come on, you want to try this? So I went and I tried it, and I can remember being, I went to Atlantic City with somebody who was in their 30s, an older guy, and an older chick who was in her late 20s, and they were all night long, they were like ripping and they were running, and I'm just tagging along because it's cool, like I'm hanging out with these older people and I'm drinking and I'm having a good time, and you know, they were like, you want to try this? And I said, sure, I'll try it, and I tried it. It was nothing, okay, like, you know, didn't want one more or nothing like that. But it wasn't long before they got up and they ran from the chamber like, we gotta go, shoot back to Wilmington. And it wasn't until the second time that I tried it that I fell in love with that stuff. And, you know, I had went home after probably more than a 24-hour run for the first time ever smoking. And I said to my mom, you have got to try this stuff. And she said, okay, let's go. So I went out and we started smoking together. And I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about the point, like, I'm not talking about a war story, I'm not talking about anything, but the point that led me up to the gift of desperation that brought me into the place where I stand today. And, you know, so I can remember, like, being this child, and, like, I don't ever, like, I say that, and it doesn't even sound right to me, because I never really remember being a child. And I can remember sitting behind, a gas station with my mom, like, she would do anything for me. Don't get me wrong. Like, I've learned that for years I got high because of her. You know, I didn't have no choice. It's her fault. What do you expect from me? I used her as an excuse, but, like, now I know she did the best that she could with what she had. She suffers from the same thing that I suffer from. You know, and I can remember going to her, and she fit my ways and my means for many years. I never had to do what it took to get one more, but just be her daughter and hang out with her. And I can remember sitting behind a store one night begging her, mom, please just rob it. Please just rob it. And she went in and she robbed the store, and then it took her on a whole long spree. And like, I was her getaway driver. Now I'm probably 14 years old. And then the day came where the cops came and they kicked the door in and they took my mom away. And, you know, I had already built a couple little connections from her connections, and every once in a while, you know, it wasn't that serious yet. It was still kind of fun. I really didn't know that I seriously had a problem yet. It was just what it was. It was just a way of life, right? And, you know, she did a year in jail. And, you know, I partied here and there, and I still drank every day, and I still smoked other things every day. And in that process, instead of the drugs, I ended up, you know, sabotaging my son's father. Like, I poked holes in the condoms. Like, I told you I was abandoned. I needed you to love me. Like, I poked holes in the condoms. I flushed the birth control. Like, I'm going to have this baby, and this baby's going to love me forever, and we're going to live happily ever after. Like, the fantasy. Like, I never had a clue of what living in reality was. And, you know, I had that baby, and the only thing that has stood firm, I'm 16 years old now, like the only thing that has stood firm was that baby loved me forever, no matter what. He's actually the reason why I even know what unconditional love is. I can remember saying, I will never, ever, ever be like her. I will never do that to my children. it wasn't long after, like, you know, I went through the whole 9 months. Like, I think I drank one double deuce of Colt 45. And that's about all I did while I was pregnant with my son. And then, like, I had him. And it wasn't long after that that I went off to the races. I had that one. And then that thing opened up. And then I went off to the races again. And my mom was out of jail. And she went straight back off to the races. And we were, you know, BFFs again. Like, that thing that not until this year my reality was shattered, that she never was my best friend, that she's always my mother. And she just didn't know how to be my mother properly. And, you know, it wasn't until I was about 18 years old and she had robbed some more stores and I was with her and they had took her, actually I was 17, and they had took her back to jail not long after she had already gotten out. And that was the very first time that I realized that, you know, I think I have a problem, because I started doing things that were against my morals and my values, the ones that I thought I had. Started doing things to get one more, and, you know, started, like, neglecting my child. Like, I'm never going to be like her, but I start neglecting my child. Like, you know, the drugs start being put in front of him. I start leaving him with random strangers, and, you know, that went on for just a little bit. Like, I maintained, and I still had my kid with me. And to fast forward a couple years, like, 21 years old, like, I'm out on the streets, like, I'm doing whatever I have to do to get one more, I get pregnant again. And this time it wasn't as pretty. I was well into my disease. Like, I live to use and I use to live. Like, I got high every day. If 52 weeks in a year, I probably slept 52 times. And you know, I got pregnant with this son, and I went to my grandfather. And, like, in the meantime, let me back up a little bit. Like, I wanted to be with my mom so bad still. The second time she went to jail, I went out and committed a crime and made sure they knew who I was and ended up going to jail and so I could be with my mom. And it was like 3 days after I turned 18. And that started my story of going in and out of jail. So I was a frequent flyer for a lot of years. I would walk out of there. I thought it was a joke. They knew me by name. They wanted me. I belonged. And I would walk out of there and say, hey, I got probation. Keep the bed warm. I'll be back. And I did that for years. And so in that process, I ended up getting pregnant again. My grandfather had given me money to get an abortion 2 times with this baby. And, like, both times I couldn't make it past the dope man. Thank God. And, you know, so I ended up, like, living in another fantasy. Like, for the whole 9 months that I was pregnant with this child, like, I partied. Like, even sometimes, and I hate to even say this because I know it's recorded, so, you know, even sometimes I wished he would just die. I wished, like, because I just had to get high. I just had to get high. He didn't want to come into this world. This world sucked. Parents were nothing. Like, it was a horrible place, man. Like, I didn't have a good life. I didn't know nothing else. And, you know, went into labor and had this baby. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know what? I stopped smoking a few days beforehand. And he didn't have nothing in his system. And all was well. He had jaundice. I had him in Elkton Hospital, Elkton, Maryland. And he had jaundice. They had to transfer him to Christiana Hospital in Newark, Delaware. And on the way there, I said, okay, I'll meet you guys at Christiana. On the way there, I said, I'm going to get one more. And I can remember going, and I walked down the street. You know, if you're anything like me, I know me. So, like, it just takes a head nod and the look, and I already know what time it is. I found somebody who had that look, and I had one more, and I found myself 2 or 3 days later sitting in a crack house, the hospital calling me, not being able to put the pipe down, literally crying. I could not go get my baby because I could not stop smoking. So I abandoned my son in the hospital to continue using. Through that process, man, and I tell this story because this is my vision of hope. Like, this is my vision of hope. Like, through that story, like, my children are my vision of hope. Like, through that story, through that process, you know, I never stopped, like, you know how, like, you have these little, like, peers. I've never had been introduced to Narcotics Anonymous or any other fellowships or anything like that. I didn't know there was another way to live. I just knew that there was people that went to work in the morning, and I just knew that my grandparents went to church, and we prayed to this God that you're going to hell. And I was way far past even being able to be presented into a place where they talked about, like, I was definitely already going to hell. So, you know, a higher power wasn't my thing. He was a vengeful God to me at that moment in my life. And I can remember, you know, in these little periods of clean time, usually, like, for the first, like, maybe week after I got out of jail, I would go and I would file a petition. I would file another petition. I would file another petition in the courts, like, please don't take my baby. Please don't take my baby. And then, you know, like, but by doing that, like, I kept a ground. And I can remember the day that I went in to have my parental rights terminated. That judge said to me off record, he said, don't never stop fighting. One day he'll come. And I went out, like, and like, so when I abandoned him in the hospital, now I'm worthless. Like, I turned into exactly who she is. Actually, I might have thought I was a little bit better at some point to justify, you know, the things that we tell ourselves to make ourselves feel better for the bullcrap that we've done, the pain and the shame and the guilt. Like, I can remember, like, telling myself, like, he's better off without me. Matter of fact, since I abandoned him in the hospital, like, I'm going to go ahead and get rid of my other kids, too. So I took him up to my grandmother's house. I put him in the door, and I grabbed her purse, and I walked out. And I abandoned both my children at this point, and that was the point of no return for me. That was the point where I truly said, like, this is how I want to die. Like, I'm worthless. That was the first feeling of, like, total self-hatred for me. And I ripped and I ran for years, man, and, you know, I can't say, I can say what brought me into these rooms, you know, 16 years of hardcore using, and, you know, what brought me into these rooms was, along the way, little things stuck. Like, I ended up doing a couple years in jail, and they put me into a treatment facility in the jail, and I ended up doing, and, like, that's the only program I ever completed, because I had no choice by the judge, right? Like, and then, like, all these other little rehabs along the way that I got thrown into, like, little things, like, stuck inside of me. And in that period in jail, I got a little bit of glimmer of hope. And, you know, finally, like, I had went to this one, how I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, I had went to this one facility, and I had met a couple guys in there, and they were pretty cool dudes. I didn't so particularly think that they were cute, so it's not anything, like, sexual that I wanted, but they did fill my void because they thought I was cute, you know? And I can remember, you know, I saw them getting out of the rehab around the same time, and they were like, hey, we're all in the same area. Why don't we go to a meeting tonight? And the dudes came and picked me up in his cool little Trans Am, and we all went to a meeting, St. Barnabas, and we sat in there. When I got there, there was this really cute guy in there. We called him Crooked Hat Matt, right? And right, and like, I kept coming back for about 34 days, and the whole time I was smoking weed and didn't tell nobody. And eventually I went back out and I took off running again, but I can tell you what, a seed was planted, and I knew where to come when I got hopeless. To the point of, like, you know, I can remember, like, man, in the end, like, I just couldn't stop. Like, in the end, like, I always thought I was pretty savvy. Like, I wasn't as bad because I took a shower. I wasn't as bad because, like, I had some cool clothes, maybe. Like, I didn't look as shabby. I still had all my teeth. Like, you know, I used a baby wipe this morning or something. You know, and, like, I didn't think I was as bad, like, and, like, I can remember in the end, like, I thought I was pretty sharp, but in the end, man, like, I was bugging. Like, people were, like, switching the colors of lighters in my purse and sneaking into my house and changing out my light bulbs. And like, I was bugging. Like, I mean, they talk about the point of no return, like, recall. What is it? Just, like, beyond recall. Being beyond recall, like, I was at the point, and I can remember, and it reminded me of a point when I was in a kind of like the, what was it, Three West, kind of like a rehab, a mental ward / rehab, in the hospital, and there was this guy walking around, and he was all shot out. He was shot out, and I asked the counselor, I said, what's wrong with him? She said, he smoked too much crack. And that's how I seen myself coming. Like, at the end of my road, I seen that, right? And I was so hopeless. Like, April 2nd was the day that my son was born, and it was the day that I abandoned my son in that hospital. And, you know, every year around that time, like, man, like, it was hopeless. I just wanted to die. And it came up wanted again, and, like, I had already known from previous experience, like, mind you, like, I'm bugging, like, I'm too paranoid now, so I can't do the ways and the means. Like, I can't go out and sell my body. I can't go out and rob nobody. I can't go out and hustle no more. Like, and even if I wanted to, I look so shabby at this point. Like, my looks were gone and I stunk. Like, you know, and I wanted to die. Like true hopelessness. Like, I can remember going out. It was raining that night, and I can remember going out and walking out into a major intersection, like, not looking left, not looking right, cars blowing the horns, cars swerving, and nobody would hit me. Like, I was too chicken shit to put a gun to my own head or slice my own wrist or pop all the pills that I needed to. And the days that I did pop the pills and I woke up the next morning, I was just so disappointed. I'm a failure. I still can't die. I fail at that. And, like, I can remember, something happened that night. Like, I came to sitting downstairs in the basement of my house in my underwear and a bra. Mind you, it's an unfinished basement, so it's all rocks and dirt. And, like, I'm digging through the ground looking, because maybe, just maybe, at one point I dropped something down there. And when I went to bed and I woke up, I said, please throw my pipe away. And something happened to me that night. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know if I prayed. I don't know what happened. I just know God happened. And today I know that's what it was. And I woke up the next morning and I called my mom, who has now been clean for quite some time. Thank God to the 6 years in prison that she did, you know. And I learned over my process too that, like, I was never arrested. I was always rescued. And you know, I called my mom and I called my grandma, and I had been communicating with an old friend off of Facebook that lived out in some, like, mountain hilltop out in North Carolina somewhere. And I had told her what I've been going through in life. We hadn't seen each other since we were like 11, 12 years old. And she said, my house is always open if you want help. And I got in the car, and my grandma and my mom drove me out there, and I stayed there for 2 weeks. I got clean, man. I came back, and the first thing I did was go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And the cute boy wasn't there no more, but I stayed. Like, that night I went to the meeting, and I heard this lady, Sharon, Maria R., like, I heard this lady, Sharon, and she was, like, she was standing behind the table, and she's smacking, and she's kind of loud and everything. She's smacking her hands, and she's talking about how she used to perform sexual acts to get one more. And I thought to myself, nope. I'm never telling that. More than a little bit. Thank God I'm healthy. And, you know, after that meeting, her and her significant other came to me, and they said the most profound things. They gave me a hug, and they said, you don't never have to use again. And for the first time in my life, like, I believe that that might be an option for me. And, you know, they said, you belong to the no matter what club. People say there's not really a club like that, but, like, I'm going to tell you what, like, I've learned through this process that no matter what, I don't got to get high. And, you know, they said get a sponsor, and I got a sponsor, and she was some lady that was sitting in the meeting talking about how she was going through some old stuff, like, that she hadn't dug through for years. I think she had, like, 2 or 3 years clean, and she said she was going through some stuff, and she found an old piece of paraphernalia that had some residue in it. And she said she was getting ready, started doing what you do with that thing. And she said all of a sudden her phone rang, and it was Delmarva Power, and it broke her train of thought. And she restored her to sanity. And I was like, she found that, and she didn't do that? Okay. So I asked her to sponsor me. And they said get a home group. I got a home group. I got into service with my home group. They said pray. I started praying, even though I didn't think that he was. Had my best interest in heart, and even if he did have my best interest at heart, I didn't think I was worth his best interest. You know, and I stuck around long enough, and I continued doing it. They said make 90 meetings in 90 days, and, like, I made 90 meetings in 90 days, and after that I made 90 more, and I made 90 more, and for the first 2 years I did that, and I think I missed one meeting, and in that one meeting that I missed, it was like that desperation that I felt when I walked into this door, like I was on vacation in Florida with my family, and I can remember my I can remember my family telling me, like, you know, every night I went to a meeting, and this one meeting I couldn't find, and I called my sponsor, and I'm on the phone with her for like an hour, I'm freaking out, I'm crying, she's like, you know, you just had a meeting, two or more addicts together. And you know, I can tell you that through this process, I've stayed clean one day at a time, and like, you know, I had these reservations going on in my life. And the reservations was like, I don't know if I can survive a loved one dying. Like, I don't know if I can survive, you know, I don't know if I can survive if my mom ever got high again. Would I get high with her? I've never been around my mother clean until I got clean. And, you know, my mom ended up along the way picking up some stuff and ended up having to go back into a rehab facility. And I didn't get high, you know. And like it was a couple years later after that, and I think I had a little over a year when that happened. A couple years later after that, like it was like a string thing of effects. Like my son got shot. Thank God. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Since I've been clean, I got both my children back, even the one that I abandoned in the hospital. They both live with me. They both call me mom, and they both taught me what unconditional love is. You know, like don't ever give up hope. And today I'm a worthy mother. Today I'm a worthy mother. You know, on top of that, I have two grandchildren. And I'm seeing my 18-year-old off to college this year. The one that I left in the hospital, I'm taking him and paying for his college. And that's what this program has given to me. You know, and, but like, you know, so in that period of time, also, like, my son got shot. And then, like, I had to move out of my house because the person that shot him lived in that area. And then right after that, my father died, and I didn't get high. You know, my father died. And then right after my father died, I got fired from my job. It was everything. I had a job for 5 years, and I didn't steal from them. That's a lie. I stole toilet paper, paper clips, and tape. Yep. You know, and time. End time, you know, and like, but I got fired from this job because they found out about my like 23-page rap sheet, and I lied on the application initially when you guys told me not to, and it ended up, you know, I didn't get high, and then like I can tell you, like January 4th, my grandfather passed away. The two men in my life, the two men that meant anything and everything to me outside of my sons, he passed away, and I can tell you what, there's no reason to get high in this process. You know, I have an amazing support group. They're here with me tonight. There are all the goofballs up here doing the readings, you know, and, you know, I just want to say thank you to the area, for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. And if you're new here, you don't ever have to get high again, no matter what. You don't have to use, if you're old timer here, like, keep coming back. Like, you know. Life shows up. It's not always Skittles and rainbows, a good friend of mine says, but it sure is worth it. Thanks for letting me share. Yeah.